Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Mark Murphy, and welcome to the second episode of Food 360 Live. With me on the mic is Emily Karpin. She's my director of communications and co-producer. And now she's also hosting the show with me from Surfside Studios, also known as Where We're Quarantined. I'm honored to have as our guest today a very good friend, chef and co-host of the Food Network's The Kitchen, Jeff Morrow. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Emily was going to ask the first question.
I was.
Are you going to ask the first question?
I am. I'm going to ask. So, Jeff, tell us, how did you first get on Food Network?
I am the winner of season 7 of Food Network Star. Anybody that's followed my journey would hopefully know that, but it was a much longer journey before that that was somewhat engineered to get to that position, you know. And so once I was cast on Food Network Star, it was kind of the final round, you know, the final job interview.
Right. Did you want to go on Food Network Star, or did somebody push you into it?
No, it was actually my fourth time auditioning when I finally made it on.
Wow. But yeah. What was wrong with them not taking the first three times?
You know, I was probably a little, maybe a little green, honestly. Maybe I didn't have like the complete story. You know, when I first started auditioning, I didn't have I didn't have Lorenzo. I didn't have a child. That always raises the stakes in the story, and just wasn't my time then. You know, I needed maybe a couple more years of, honing my professional chops before.
Well, you just needed to marinate a little more. Is that it?
I did. I think the timing was right. You know, if it happened when I was any younger, I would probably, you know, squandered it somehow. I was a mature man when it all happened. The right.
Oh, wait. Oh, wait. You're a mature 30, man now. I'm sorry.
32,
thank you for reminding us.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah, obviously, but you were in show business before this, if I remember correctly. I remember some story about Tony and Tina's wedding or something.
This is very true. Yeah, I'm not ashamed to admit it, and I will talk to you about it.
I'm jealous. Let me start with that.
So I was always a performer in school from third grade on. My first time I ever got on a stage, I was kind of addicted. And throughout, you know, when I was young, I used to do Second City youth programs and, you know, comedy classes and theater and anything I could to perform. So that carried me through, you know, college. I was in bands and everything. I always was on stage in some capacity. So when I finally graduated college, I opened a deli with my cousin Dave. And that same week we opened the deli, I got cast in Tony and Tina's Wedding because I auditioned. And I was pretty tailor-made for that, too, just having my Italian-American background and knowing the speak and the accents and the characters that I could draw from. You know, I got cast and worked my way up from waiter to the star, Tony, after a couple years, and did that for 4 years. So I had the, we had the deli for 4 years, and I did Tony and Tina's for 4 years. You know, worked,
even during this show, it's like you have to start as a dishwasher and work your way up on the show.
Oh yeah, totally.
It's just like the restaurant industry.
Yeah, it's like the brigade, right? It was like, I mean, it was no different than being in like football boot camp. You know, you have to start shoveling shit, and then you can finally throw the ball. You know, it really was. It was run by people that are not your typical theater thespian type people. It was like neighborhood guys from the streets of Chicago, that kind of Italian guys that were somewhat connected and would really put the fear of God into you to extract the greatest performance possible. I mean, I had chairs thrown at me. I had to do laps around the reception hall or up and down the chapel if I messed things up.
That's like my work environment.
It is. Like, I would run. I'd run, like, miles indoors. It is. I know, and I've seen it in action. So, you know, it really did groom me for, you know, a life in show business, I guess. That was my first taste of – but by the end of it, I mean, at the start of the show, I was only making $60 an hour. So I always had to – or $60 a show, shows a week.
That's pretty high.
No, $60 an hour is unbelievable. I wish it was that.
Yeah, you'd still be doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So I cooked during the day. I warmed at night for 4 years.
You said something interesting that at the age of three or whenever it was, you got excited and you loved the idea of being on the stage. And I've always been interested in acting as well my whole life. I mean, I got into cooking when I was young and I thought, you know, I don't know. I've never done it. So a year and a half ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About a year and a half ago, I told everybody, I said, I'm taking Thursdays and Tuesdays, 3 hours a night, and I'm going to acting classes. And I went on 54th Street, this acting studio place. I forgot the name of it exactly, but I went and took acting classes for 10 weeks. It was introduction to Meisner. And of course, I'm there with all these young puppies, you know, they're like 19, 18, 20 years old. These kids, they're looking at me like, who's the old guy in here? What's he doing? What's going on? I don't understand what he's doing here. Anyway, by the third class, one of them looks over and taps me on the shoulder, goes, aren't you that guy on the Food Network? What are you doing here? But anyway, it was
exactly
hilarious.
Right.
But I took it very seriously. I took the class. I had my scene with my partner. I practiced out of class. And you said earlier you were addicted to the stage. And I don't know, but I didn't even get on the stage, but just performing in front of the class, I felt the adrenaline. I felt that, like, wow, this is how all these kids get hooked on acting and move to New York and wait tables, you know, for years and years to try to get and make a break in the industry of either being on the stage or behind the camera. And I mean, it's obviously very different than what we do now on, you know, what you do in the kitchen or what I'm doing on Chopped. We're just us. But
yeah,
the idea of portraying a character, I mean, I am a little jealous. Every time I see a really good performance on stage, I'm like, I really want to do that. I would love to try to do that.
Well, I wouldn't discredit. I mean, I think you even just performing for your fellow classmates during that. And I remember when you were doing that, I was so impressed and just, you know, I was so excited for you. Right. Just because it's such a departure, but it's useful through every facet of your life, professionally and personally, I think, just to put yourself out there like that. And when you did perform for your other classmates, you were on stage 100%. You know, it might not have been 150 people, 1,000 people, but you got a taste of it. And obviously, I don't think you've – I mean, are you planning on – once this all, you know, hopefully ends,
no,
are you going to get back at
no.
it? Why?
The
no more?
Is no.
You know what? I'm gonna live my dream. I'm gonna go out there and maybe I'll start auditioning. I'll start doing, you know, maybe I should start while on this quarantine time. Maybe I should start working on some different accents and stuff. You know what I mean?
To work this day, you know, get you know, to work on some copy and you know, read some scripts.
Well, it's funny characters. You both were interested in kind of acting and performing, and yet you both had restaurants at some time. So how do you think that relates to performing arts and yeah.
Well, I was always, you know, I mean, I feel like cooking obviously is a mode of performance, you know, it's making people smile through their sensation of taste, right? So that's the same thing as like making people laugh on stage. You get that same kind of instant gratification. But that's what I loved about the deli world that I kind of grew up in. I always worked in delis in high school and through college and then opened my own because to me that was a blending of the back of the house and the front of the house, right, is that deli counter, which was my stage. Slicing meats, interacting with people, getting them that first slice, making sure it's a quarter pound, nice and thick. You know what I mean? Like, there's a whole performance to it. And that's why I was, like, hooked on that world. But I don't know, Mark. I mean, you were in the, you know, the back of the house probably way more than I was. But you, I mean, it's the same thing.
You went to cooking school, too, didn't you? You went to Cordova at one point, right?
Yep, correct. I'm trained, yeah. Well, I mean, like, because I, and that was, to me, was to get, you know, I wanted to solidify my skills, you know, get the, you know, get that under my belt to help increase my odds of making it, you know, in food television. Because I knew I was never going to be the best.
Look at me now.
I'm Facebooking while you're Instagram living while recording it. Double duty. This is amazing.
We're so multi-talented. It's amazing.
We're multitasking.
But just to be clear, so you went to college for radio and TV.
Correct.
Uh-huh. What's that? What did you learn then that is still the same as it is now? Did you feel like it helped you? And then after that, obviously, you went to cooking school. So
I don't know what I did with that degree. Like, I never did anything professionally because I really didn't, you know. I think I just paid that loan off finally. I don't know, 4 years into my television career, which is
nicely done.
You know, not saying a lot. But I was an average student, you know. I did video, like production, edited video for news and stuff like that. And I was in a band. What college did was kind of give me a set of balls, I guess, and learn how to live on my own and all that. But I learned so much more in my adulthood. Like, I don't, like, even now that we're shooting the kitchen from our house and, you know, I'm doing all these setups and, like, it's helped me with the technical side of it, especially now when we're, you know, we're without crew. You know, there is no more crew. It's my wife.
Well, I was going to ask you because I, unfortunately, Saturday I was deep involved in my vegetable garden and I didn't have time to see it. But was last week the first one that you had remotely shot remotely like you're doing?
No, it was that was actually 2 weeks ago. Last week was like our last new studio one. So the next 4 weeks will be all remotely, you know, shot in the home, quarantine edition.
So it's on Saturdays, right?
Yep.
Of course, Saturdays at 11 o'clock.
11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
11 a.m. on the Food Network.
But he's in Chicago. It's a different time there, right?
It's 1 hour earlier.
It's 1 hour earlier. Okay, so whatever.
You're safe.
So Saturday morning, it's on, but I'm excited this Saturday to watch it. One, because I want to see not only the show, because I like the show, but because I want to see the technical aspect of it and how you guys dealt with this. Because this must be different. I mean, I know they send you a bunch of wires and cameras and lights and said, go ahead, take yourself cooking in your kitchen. What is it like doing this? This is crazy.
It is crazy. It's basically shooting an entire television show on your telephone. You know what I mean? Then that's what we're using. iPhones, one of them's in a handheld device called a gimbal, and Sarah's on that getting close-ups in the shot of just me. And then the other ones are locked off, so you get the food and the overhead shot. And then I got a little microphone. I got lights. Tripod. I communicate with the production through my son Lorenzo's phone, and we're talking to that via Zoom. And then Sarah's talking through the iPad to the director, who's directing her to put the camera places. I am so tired at the end of it. I'm like, I don't care what you say, how much we're all getting used to watching, you know, newscasters from their house and weather people from their house and Kimmel and Fallon. Nothing will ever replace a television crew. Because you know it, Mark, I know it. You get to set, you sit your fat ass down, they bring you coffee or tea or whatever you want, and then you leave at the end of the day after making stupid zingers and jokes for 8-9 hours, and that's it. You can't leave this job, and it's always in your freaking house.
I think Cabin Fever just kicked in. We've got Jeff Morrow crying on the other end of the phone here.
He needs a break,
man. All right, Jeff, this is the new life. This is the new reality.
He's foaming at the mouth.
This is terrible.
Happening.
Oh, no. Jeff, you're going to be okay. You're going to get
Meisner.
That was good. That was good. Get back to your character. I love it. I love that. Listen, but what I'm also, but you forgot to mention actually the one thing that we know how to do really well, but you have to do everything yourself. You got to prep everything. You got to prep the swap outs. You got to do all of the cooking. You got to do all of the shopping. Like, so when we're on set, there's a whole team of people that does that for us.
That is the biggest thing.
This is
the culinary crew. It's crazy. Yeah. We're doing each recipe twice, two passes. So we're essentially getting four camera angles. Like, so we have to clean up and then reset and do it again. The dishes.
The dishes alone in this quarantine. I just want out.
I am so tired. My hands. I wish. And we're out. You know, remember the Palmolive, was it? You know, your hands get soft. My hands aren't getting soft. You know, luckily Sarah handles most of the, she insists, but she's a trooper, man. She's right in there with me, because the other option is not working. And I, you know, we all want to work here and do what we can to, I feel like, listen, I can't feed people. I might as well entertain them. Right.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarcella.
Putting bad guys away. There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarcella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarcella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, it's Mark Murphy, and welcome to the second episode of Food 360 Live. With me on the mic is Emily Carpin, our guest today, a very good friend, Jeff Morrow of Food Network's The Kitchen.
Well, here's the deal. Is also, I think that, you know, the public is used to seeing your show every Saturday, and they're going to miss you if you just start. You can't just start running reruns because time's moving on and you got things to talk about and you got people to talk about. It's interesting. And I'm interested. And I say, you know, so where is this, you know, quarantine thing taking us to? And I'd like to know from you, obviously now I know one thing you don't want to keep doing the show from your house.
I'll do it as long as it takes, right? Forever.
You're a trooper. I know you'll dig the ditch. You'll keep filling it until we're allowed to go out and do something else. But what have you learned new today in this time in the last 4 weeks or 5 weeks or however, what's it been, 6 months?
It's day 40.
Not that she's counting or anything, but what have you learned that you're going to keep doing when this is over that made your life, is making your life easier? Is there anything that you can quantitate towards, like, oh, this is actually, why didn't I think of this earlier?
I don't know. You know what? I mean, keep it, at least from the recipe standpoint, keep it a little more simple.
I'm talking about anything in your life right now.
No, that's, I think anything, first of all, like, is, you know, let's get granular with the show. I mean, it's, If it's complicated to do it in this setting in my kitchen twice over, it's probably complicated for the home viewer to do it, right? So keep it simple, right? There's beauty and simplicity in cooking what you know, right? Cook what you know, make it simple or simpler, you know? I think in life, it's like, it's given me greater patience that I think would wear thin when I wouldn't get on a plane every 5-6 days, which I'm normally used to. And being in close quarters really kind of hones that muscle that otherwise gets rest when you jump on a plane. And I go to New York every week, almost, you know, I'm somewhere every week. I haven't been anywhere. I mean, except around the block with the dogs, you know? So it really has taught me some patience. I'm still working on patience, but it's made me a more patient person, which I can definitely translate to not only my home life, but also being on set and hurrying things up. Like I like to get moving in television. Nothing's rare, you know, things are rarely moving with speed, I feel like.
Right. And you guys are both part of an ensemble cast, you know, co-hosts, right? Who are you missing? What's it been like doing it on your own for both of you?
I'm missing everybody. Just being in a room with people and riffing, you know, I think that's so much, like, for me, I've been doing it my whole life, is, you know, a class clown in, you know, working rooms and feeding off people. And that's what's beauty about the format. It's like I can lay back and I wait and I throw a zinger in there when it's appropriate or when it's not appropriate. And then at least cut it out. I'm missing doing that, because now we're trying to replicate it via Zoom and internet, you know, in telecommunication, you know, teleconferencing. It's not the same, man. I miss like human interaction live, when you can see and smell the person. You know,
for me too, it's like, you know, first I think it's a double-edged sword, because we're doing a lot of these cocktail hours with friends. We're doing them together ourselves, you and I and our families together. But, you know, I got to have drinks with my friend in Rome the other night, which I never really, I see her when I go to Rome, and another friend of mine he lives in Connecticut. We got together on the thing and we had a drink together. So that was fun. But I do miss the human interaction, the actual person standing there. I mean, I don't mind that I don't have to clean up after we're done. I just push the button, you know.
And it's over.
It's over.
There's no rings on the white table, per usual. Just various ash everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's always a big
problem. There's also something very special, that the energy you get from people, right, when you're around them. The energy of your co-host, the energy of everybody that works there. It's been hard to transition into this time and doing it alone.
Yeah, no, we are not shooting Chopped remotely yet. I don't know if that's ever something they would be able to do, but I think it would be fairly difficult.
I don't even know how they would do that. I'm sure, but you would do it if they asked you to do it. I mean, you would do it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to be doing some live stuff here for the app soon. They sent me a bunch of equipment, sent me all the wires as well. I'm going to have to figure that out.
I'm telling you, I just did three demos for a partnership with a beer company, and they sent everything. And I am telling you, 3 metric ton of stuff, boxes, what? Cables, 200-foot cables to my router in the basement, robotic camera. I mean, my head was spinning the last 2 days, and our kitchen was like as many cords as you'd put on a set of Chopped. So, I mean, but this, you do it, right? I mean, because A, I want to work. It's a great opportunity. And B, it's like, what else was I going to do today, honestly? I mean, what, take my fourth bath of the week?
So you are showering. That's a good thing to know.
And shaving.
I did shave. The mustache lasted the first, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of quarantine. And then it was like food was getting, I was like taking sips of things and going like this. Like Sam Elliott, you know, after a sarsaparilla, and sucking the whatever. And I'm like, oh, my God.
We got it.
I made myself sick. I really did. It was horrible. And then I vomited on my mustache, which I in turn sucked out and ate and then vomited. It's a vicious cycle.
So you've been playing a lot of music. I saw you and Lorenzo jamming out the other day on Instagram. I'm so jealous, because obviously I know you're a musician and you've got guitars and drums and flutes and whatever else you got in the house. But You got a harpsichord back there too.
I got a bassoon.
I was never really given music lessons when I was a kid. I was just getting yelled at all the time, so they didn't have time to teach me anything. But you got to learn all these kind of fun things, and it must be great having that father son thing going on.
Well, like my son's not, and I know Callen, your son is a tremendous athlete and baseball player, and every sport he touches. My son is, I'm not saying he's not gifted, he just never took a shining to it. So it was always, he does Taekwondo and he does music in the School of Rock program. And for me, it was like, let's see how he does. I never pushed it, but it's become, since I've played music since I was a kid, now he's doing it, it's become like our catch. You know what I mean? So father, sons, they go out back, they throw the ball around, which we do and stuff, but like just getting together and jamming for 15 minutes is fun. Like it's a release for both of us. It's a good hobby, just something that you could pick up that you don't really need to depend on anything for other than whatever skills you retained that day. And it's such a release for me. Like I could be fairly crabby or tense or anxious or something, and I pick up, I strum something, I sing a little tune, and not even performing, just for myself. And then there's nothing better.
The last time I was grateful enough to be a guest on the kitchen, I noticed you had a whole setup on set. You have guitars and other people come in and jam with you. They give you your own little room there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because I've made myself a very simple and easy to work with talent on set. I ask for coffee in the morning, and that's it. I don't need a chicken for lunch. I don't need the kale chips. I don't need none of that. I just want that. And I think through the years, I've pieced together and kind of commandeered a room in our studio, which has turned into my music room, right? Nobody's really said anything yet, I guess, because I'm not a pain in the ass to work with, at least in my head, that's why. But it is like it is my thing. Like it's how I reset in between the 12 acts we shoot in a day, 6 acts per show, 2 shows a day. Kind of keeps me fresh and keeps me tight,
Right. Well, now, but of course, I guess the production's going to learn now because of the quarantine situation that you can get your own damn coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
I just shout out commands and nobody's listening here in my home. Can I get a chicken ranch BLT wrap? And nobody's.
That vase is going to come crashing over your head if you ask for too much, I think.
Oh, my God, I know. And I start snapping my fingers. That works too, Mark. Oh, you know that.
That'll go a long way. What kind of music do you listen to when you cook?
Oh my God, everything. Which I'm listening to the new Fiona Apple album that came out last week. So I'll listen to a new album and I'll probably listen 3-4 times through the course of 3-4 meals and let it soak in before I make a determination as to whether or not I will listen to it again. But I'm a fan of like indie music, hip hop, everything from The Strokes to Wilco to Frank Sinatra, anything. Just it's all about mood and what day of the week. If it's like Monday, Tuesday, I might not even listen to music. 'Cause it's like, let's just get through this shit and like move on, enjoy the meal. But it's not time to like party, especially now because during this quarantine, Sarah and I have had like a zero booze during the week policy.
That's a terrible policy. Honestly.
It is. It's not easy, but it is. I'm like, why? I know why. She's fine. She can live off one glass of wine a day for the rest of her. Me, it's a little harder.
Maybe she's trying to say something to you.
Hey, we all have our ways of communicating, and we're learning about each other's nuances these days through the quarantine.
Yeah.
So the music of the week, I like it. I have outdoor speakers. I got speakers out through my house, and I have vinyl records, too, that I can – pump throughout the house. So it's always a constant in the house, especially when cooking. It's like hard to have both, one without the other. When I come to the beach house, I'm like, let's play some mute. When we're on trips together, I'm always very in tune to what's being played.
Yep. Speaking of trips. So when this is all over,
you're making me cry
out of the house again. Where's your first trip? Where are you going? Ooh. And am I going with you?
I think we should all go to Tulum. I think that's first.
Yes.
Replicate that. I'd love to go to Cayman. I love Grand Cayman, Cayman Islands. I love their food. I love the beach. It's so small. great people. I'm just looking for, like, before that, like, I'm looking forward to going somewhere with friends, obviously, just like maybe even without the kids, just an adult trip just to get, you know, away from that situation. I'm sure all the parents would agree with me. But I'm looking forward to, like, going out to dinner with, like, a group. Wouldn't that sound fun? And having people bring you things.
Yeah, but you know what? Actually, I think the kids are probably excited about going to do something with their friends, too. I mean, I got two kids at home. I can't imagine being a teenager or being, like, well, I mean, I got a 13 and a 16-year-old. It's like, imagine being without any friends around. I mean, like, being a teenager and not having friends to hang out with, it must be the weirdest thing.
It is, and it's like, how is it going to shape the generation right now? You know, is this going to become its own unique generation, independent of whatever generation Z or the Zennials or whatever the hell they call them now? But is it like all the kids from in school aged right now are gonna be forever changed? You know, I don't know. Well, how is this gonna shape them in the future?
I'm just hoping in the end of all this there's some good stuff comes out of it. I think we're all learning a good lesson right now. The planet's taking a good big breath of fresh air. I feel like everybody's saying now the air is better. You know, people can do a lot more things without actually having to travel. I think I think Cuomo was saying it yesterday. He was talking about, you know, this, what do they call it? When you do the medicine with the phone?
Telemedicine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, once you get older, whatever, I mean, we're already a little, you know, it'd be easier to call the doctor and just have a little FaceTime with them. You don't have to spend the money getting in the gas and spending it and driving to the doctor. It's like, you know what? Take two aspirin and go to bed.
That's it. You know, everybody wins. Everybody wins. Yeah. And you know, everybody should win. Like, you're, you know, more preserved, and who knows and how long this virus will be present in the whatever in on surfaces, on people, and everything. I mean, if you can you know, reduce the risk of infection, I mean, that's in the near future. Like, I don't see that. I mean, I think anytime an old person walks in a hospital, an old person, a senior or one of our elders, it's risky whether they fall or catch something or whatever. And if you kind of mitigate that risk from people from all ages, hospitals are like, you know, I got friends in the hospital right now. I had a very close friend in the hospital, and he had a liver transplant. I can't see him. For his sake, for my, like, you can't even walk in a hospital right now. And that's crazy. But hopefully in the future, there will be a lot less reasons to walk in a hospital.
I'm looking to walk into a restaurant first. I want to walk into a restaurant with a bunch of people at the bar, order a drink, sit down and have a meal with friends and hug them up.
Oh my God. And guess what happens when you're done dining? You give them, it's, I don't know if you guys remember, it's like a little card that has digits on it and it holds information in the cloud for your banking. And you give that to them and you don't have to do any dishes. You just give it to them and you get, and then you walk up and you leave.
Yeah.
And someone comes over and takes the dish from.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's crazy.
And they're not robots, they're human people.
That we love.
And they that we love. That want to get back to doing that.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarsella.
Putting bad guys away.
There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarsella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarsella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
We'll all find new traditions, but I want to go back to some family traditions. So you were born and raised in Chicago. You're from a big family. Mark was born in Italy, Italian-American family. What is your kind of favorite family tradition, let's say Italian-American? And then, Mark, I want to hear your favorite kind of family tradition that you will keep.
My favorite is within the same breath, arguing, laughing, and crying. while around the dinner table. I don't know. I think for us, it's Christmas Eve has always been big. We host it now. So we have we're up to 32 people in our home. The meal planning goes on for a year, you know, prior. We switch up the menu every year. We often adhere to specific themes like Mexican or Greek or, all American. Right. So I just love that. And, you know, I guess the greatest tradition I learned growing up is filling your house frequently, you know, with people and family and friends. And obviously now, not to put a downer on it, but that's, you know, impossible. Yeah. Well, what about you, Mark?
We were just talking to a friend of ours in Washington, and she's Greek, and the Greek Easter has just passed last week. Yeah. And she said, you know, usually they have 30 or 40 people over for Greek Easter, and they cook all this food. And she says, I think I saved a lot of money this year. I didn't have anybody come over.
Whole lambs aren't cheap.
Cook the same amount.
Yeah, she said she still cooked a lot because it's just sort of traditional. I mean, for me, I think, you know, traditionally, I think with my family here is really – Thanksgiving is my favorite. I mean, it's just like, and it's not even just the food. It's just getting together and being with people. And it's just, you know, and bringing in people that don't have families or can't travel as far, bringing them in to the table and under your roof and having a good time. And it's just, I don't know, it's a real, and also what I've always said about Thanksgiving is I love it. You all get together and you don't have to worry about buying people presents. Cause you know, you never know what to get uncle this or aunt this.
But I am Thanksgiving, so nothing. Over it. I that's what I love about Thanksgiving. That is probably hands down my favorite because we don't host it. So we go to my in-laws and I help her cook and we get dinner on the table and everything. But then I get up and leave. And then I go to my cousins where all my family, my side is at. And then we drink and have dessert. I usually bring a nice bottle of bourbon or tequila or something. I don't have to clean. I don't have to cook. I don't have to menu plan. It's very, you know, relaxing. And you don't have to like lug gifts in and out of your car or worry about the pressure. I'm over it. I keep saying that. I'm like, I don't want anything from anybody, but just guess what? You're not getting anything from me. I'll make you a meal. But you know what? Like I'll get the best, great wine, great, beautiful meat, all this stuff. We'll put on a beautiful party. It's not about like being frugal or anything. It's just, it's a headache. And all you end up with is like a sea of paper, you know, that
and a bunch of stuff somebody probably doesn't even want. Half the time you get stuff, it's like, I don't need this. This is the last thing I needed.
Well, it sounds like you guys need to make better lists, maybe for your loved ones, and shop a little smarter, is all I'm saying.
Okay, all right. This is where we're going to cut her out of the screen. No, this is – so I had something really genius to say. Oh, I just remembered it. So I don't think it's a secret, but you're working on a cookbook, right?
Yeah, I actually finished the photography the day the lockdown happened. Like that Sunday before that Monday. So I worked on the book the first 2 weeks of the quarantine, like finished the manuscript. So it's handed in. Everything's ready to go. Now, hopefully a year, you know, less than a year from now, it'll come out, God willing.
Who shot the book?
Ken Goodman.
Our good friend Ken.
He loves you.
Ken is such a great guy. I got to tell you, salt of the earth. Best
salt of the earth. And you know what? We did it. We were lean and mean. We had a couple people, my like sous chef here, my culinary producer here that I use, and one guy from Tim Macklin, our culinary producer from the kitchen, and Ken, and that was it. Rented an Airbnb about 5 minutes from my house. Ken and Tim stayed there in the Airbnb. We shot the whole thing on natural light. It was lean and mean, and everybody was a trained chef. So it was like no people like mucking stuff up. You know, the food looked real, right. But it looked pretty. And we moved with purpose like you would in a kitchen. And it wasn't like, let me run this through the chain. Let me, you know, like that's that stuff wore on me. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of work, though. I mean, I knew it was going to be, but nothing prepares you for it. It's crazy.
Look, my cookbook as well. It's like, let's do a cookbook. So much fun. And then it's like, oh my gosh, this takes so much work. It's really amazing how much work it is. But now, hopefully, it's out before Christmas. And now you know you don't have to buy anybody a present. You just wrap up a bunch of your cookbooks and bring them all around.
That is Mark Murphy television genius. I love it.
And if it's not out, you bring them a little postcard. Say when it comes out, you'll get it.
Oh, it's like a free coupon.
There you go.
To be cashed in later.
And to be cashed in later. Equal or lesser value. Of course, two.
But I do think that people can assume that writing a cookbook is easy. And that having a cookbook. You know, everyone always asked us, why don't you have a cookbook yet? It had been years. You've only have one. This is your first one. What's one thing that you learned from the process that you would tell people that they would probably assume is much easier than it actually is?
Don't do it.
It's not cheap. Right. You know, you got to dip into the pocket. I think you're, you know, as good as the people you surround yourself. I learned that trust my instincts as far as, you know, who I wanted around me to do it. And I think that I wasn't pressured into using like fancier, like more, I don't know. I mean, yeah. Ken, if you know, Ken, I mean, Ken is like a legend almost in the business. And a great photographer, but I learned that, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. And I learned a lot about like my own voice too, as far as writing the head notes, which I really went, I think pretty deep into. And I have some very lengthy, most head notes are lengthy. So it's almost closer to, it's like a hybrid memoir / cookbook, a lot of great stories in there. And
Was this a therapy session? Oh my God. Are you writing this thing out or what?
Dude, I was very relieved, you know, to hand it in. It was overwhelmingly, you know, accomplished feeling. So, but not ready to repeat it anytime soon.
Yeah, right. But for people that don't know, head notes are each recipe that goes into a cookbook. You have to write kind of a story about either why you chose that recipe or why it's important to you, which is in itself a lot of work.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It's almost more, you know, I mean, it's almost more work than the recipe. I mean, the recipes I either had or we developed or whatever, and you shoot them and you tweak them and then you make them look pretty and all that. But it's like that's your voice. And I feel like I think one of my problems was I kept like painting, repainting, you know, like going back and painting over the canvas and like, you know, it's like sometimes you just got to step away. And it's and lock it in. You know what I mean?
It's
and
not done. Try to leave it alone.
It's done. Sign the painting.
It's pretty funny. It's amazing though. I mean, I've had my cookbook's been out for a while, but I love that it does in the end bring me a lot of joy when I get people telling me either on social media or something that they cooked one of the dishes from the book and that they loved it and their family loves it. It's now one of their you know, they're in their rotation and their family of what they're cooking. It's really nice to be able to take a little bit of something that you do and give it to them to them to share with their family, which is we're basically as a chef or as somebody that's in the food industry, we're looking to do that all the time anyway. I was just going to ask you what's two quick questions. Best dish and worst dish you've made during quarantine. You must have had a clunker, no?
Best dish I've made during quarantine. We'll start with the best. Sarah, what was the best dish so far? We've been crushing it. That's a fact.
She's not paying
attention. She says she's eating carrots like a freaking Easter bunny right now, crunching away, ruining my audio. I did lamb chops the Saturday before Easter. And they were like from this place called Purely Meats that has done lamb for generations. And I got them. And you know, like wet aged meat, right? It has like a sweet smell to it, especially with like lamb. It was like so funky. And I was like, I dry it out overnight on a rack. And I grilled them up with just some Greek style potatoes, just peeled and halved and like simmered for an hour and a half in lemon juice and stock and butter. And that was it. The lamb, the potatoes, and like a salad. And it was just, the lamb was so funky and charred. It was awesome. That was my favorite.
Love it.
The worst one. This is a good. I don't know. What was it? I don't know. Maybe I made pancakes one morning for Lorenzo, and I just think like I undercooked them, you know, so they're like gummy in the middle, but they look really pretty. And I was like doing a live demo for them. It just, my heart wasn't in it. You know what I mean? When you're just like churning out demos because like, you know, duty calls, but I wasn't connected. Like my heart and the plate weren't connected, you know. It's, and he was like, they're pretty good. And I'm like, ooh.
It happens sometimes. It's funny you mentioned lamb chops, because I just butchered some lamb chops earlier, and they're marinating in olive oil and herb de Provence, and that's what we're having for dinner tonight.
See,
and what
do
we
lucky.
Call those? We call them sprotaditos.
Sprotadico. I saw that on your, what does that mean?
It means burning the fingers, because you're supposed to, when you grill them, you pick them up and you eat them with your fingers. You and you burn your fingers.
In Italiano.
In Italiano, si dice scottadito.
Como se dice, scottadito.
Como se dice? Scottadito.
Scottadito.
So, Jeff, scottadito. Who's your dream quarantine guest, dead or alive, that you can come over for dinner? Who are you picking?
Or no, they got to be with the whole time.
Oh.
Somebody, no, the quarantine.
Whoa. Okay.
Who would you input into that family right now? We need a fourth person. There's three of you.
We need an even number.
It's a house of cards, man. No, we can't. We're too tight. It's just the three of us here. If we had one more, I mean, it doesn't take much to overload this little three pack we got going. Good question. I would say, who's always, you know, who would I quarantine with, alive or dead? Man, we like, who would you do? Have you answered this? Is it like a select? Is it?
No one's asked us.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm almost thinking that I would think that I would want to quarantine somebody that my kids would be able to hang out with, because I feel bad for them being, you know, they're brother and sister, and they get along really well. But I mean,
if they had a mutual friend.
No.
Pino just threw up.
What happened?
God,
what
happened? The dog just threw up. Get up from there.
Oh, no. This is what happens on live.
This is what happens on live.
All right, outside. This is what happens on live. I'm just going to make sure he's outside. We'll clean that up. It's very yellow. I think he ate some of the chickpea curry I made earlier this morning.
Well, maybe that's your worst dish. It didn't settle well.
You know what? You know what I would do? I would... Like a robot. Can I quarantine with a robot?
That's, you can do anyone like, you want.
Like a super intelligent robot, you know, that can not only, you know, obviously do the dishes and clean up the kitchen, but also clean up dog vomit. That is the color of a, you know, Mumbai sunset that I'm looking at right now.
I get to answer.
He's got to go clean up. We got to get this over with.
I think I'd pick Jim Gaffigan, a comedian. Ooh. For sure. Because that would be
tears of a clown. Tears of a clown.
There you go.
And someone has to make me laugh.
Listen, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I think this was fun. I hope you had fun. I wish you were here in my house with me quarantined so we could hang out and have a drink together for a little bit.
And Sarah and Lolo.
Yes,
I know. I miss you. We miss you guys. I know we've been talking a lot, probably more, you know, more than we've ever talked before. But I think that's going to be our first trip, is down to the beach. Hop in the car. Sarah actually just got tested, and she's negative. So, Tobin, she was positive. It's like the only test you want to, you know, but still.
Exactly. The only one you want to fail.
Anybody? Exactly. Like, what a world.
All right, Jeff,
all right,
we love
you guys. Love you
too.
Thank you. Love you, brother.
Toodles.
See you soon.
McDoodles.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
Ooh. That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yimby's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that!
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to the Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat, Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.